All right, guys. Moving into a Q&A time. This is kind of an ask anything about the topic of lament time. I hope you've been thinking about a question or two to ask Mark. He's going to come up, and we're just going to circulate the mics, and we will go from there. Mark, I have a question to just start us off, just to get it churning. In that grid that you gave us, which is so helpful, the turn, complaint, ask, trust, where in that movement do most Christians bounce, do you feel like?
Yeah, most of them bounce initially at complaint.
Yeah.
Because it's just so unfamiliar. They're used to turning to God in prayer, you know, Lord's Prayer. They're used to asking. They're used to trusting. It's the complaint thing. And to be honest with you, if you take out complaint, there is no lament. Like, the essence of lament is the presence of the complaint. So helping people to be good complainers. It's one of the reasons why I left the word complaint in. Other people who have maybe written on lament, they use different words, different language, and that's fine. I wanted to keep it in because I want to push to have people understand in a sort of a legal courtroom sense, you have a complainant laying out, here's what's wrong. So that's where they tend to bounce.
That's good. All right. Stefan and I are going to circulate the mics. Who's got a question for Mark? Yep. Stand, if you would, brother. Give your name and your church. I'm just going to hold the mic while you ask.
All right. My name is Sammy. I'm from True Love Church in Central Phoenix. And my question is kind of two-parted. Is lament solely for when, I guess, something happens that we have no control over, as in like grieving? Or can we add like if it's our own sin, something like, you know, Psalm 51 and David, does that have to do with lament as well? I know we kind of looked into the website and it said that Psalm 51 was a lament. So kind of what's the difference there and kind of in that? So
yeah, great question. And you had two questions or just one?
I guess that was one and two, I guess.
Okay,
I mean,
very.
Where does Psalm 51,
great. Yeah, so there's four categories of lament. You have personal lament, you have corporate lament, you have imprecatory lament, which is when injustice has been done to you, and then there's repentant lament, which is, hey, I've done wrong and need to acknowledge it. In fact, really, the entire book of Lamentations is a combination of both circumstantial and the acknowledgement that we have erred. We're getting what we deserve because, and it's also a little more complicated than that, because the corporate lament of Lamentations is the whole society is getting the effects of our collective waywardness, and how do we talk about that? And in a sort of Eastern mindset that we're all in this together, they're lamenting what's taking place. So we can even have some conversations about the difference between sort of an Eastern mindset versus a Western mindset, even as we approach lament. But there are a number of lament psalms. If you look in the back of the Dark Clouds, Deep Mercy, I have a list of the various kinds of lament, and you'll see that Psalm 51 is the first of, or the most well-known of a number of repentant oriented laments. How do you talk about your sin? And additionally, how do you maybe even lament the presence of sin in the world instead of just being, man, I really blew it, like I'm still a broken person. And so how do you even regularly pray through repentant like laments, both as a way to engage in your needs for further sanctification and as a bit of an inoculation for having to pray this when you've really royally messed up. It's kind of good to know this is the language that you would use. And it's a reminder, may I not be named among those who have to pray this over, let's just, my marriage after being unfaithful and blowing it. So those are, they're good, not only reactive laments, but they're good discipleship laments in advance.
All right, who's next?
Yeah, Sean Pella, Communities. So I guess my question would be specifically in the area of complaint. And I don't know if you or just any of you guys together collectively, I'd love to hear your thoughts. Usually in these situations, whether it be a hospital room or something, the core of complaint usually is coming from this why. Why are you allowing this? Why this? And sometimes it teeters into, and maybe appropriately so, this like, why does God hate me? Why, you know, and it really moves beyond almost the way that scripture is speaking to it. And it's hard. There's parts where legitimately I'm sitting there and I'm going, this is bull crap. I don't know why he's doing this. And I feel pretty frustrated by with you in that. And I don't want to teeter into that. You know, you want to kind of rally them back in as a pastor. So I'd just love to hear how you navigate those moments, what would be helpful. Because it does feel like you want to let them sit in it. You want to be like Job's companions, but at the same time, you don't want to let them go off the rails, you know.
Totally. So, yeah, it's great pastoral instinct there. So in my experience, what we typically do is we try to exegete, this is incorrectly, we try to exegete their complaint and theologically explain why they shouldn't feel what they feel. Lament, I think, is a better solution because lament says, I get it, and this is also true, and I'm here pastorally to help you hold these two things in tension. My tendency was to try and resolve those, to bring to conclusion their questions and their frustrations, and I think lament was helpful to me in that it just allows for two things to be true at the exact same time. This is really bad, and I can't reconcile this, and we also know that God is good. So one of the things I failed to mention is that every lament has a pivot in it. It's words like but, or even so, or then. Psalm 77, it's that section where he says, then, and he begins to search internally. And so I think one of the ways that pastorally lament is uniquely helpful is it allows for us to kind of stand on the but, or to stand on the then, and help somebody know that to be a Christian is not an either or choice. And then to realize that over time, God's purposes may be clear, but in this moment, we have to trust that he is good and this is hard without trying to explain the reasons or, you know, like when our daughter died, people were like, well, maybe more people will come to Jesus. Well, maybe. or God knows he can trust you with this. I'm like, well, I don't feel very trustworthy, you know, right now. Or yeah, maybe God will give you more children. I'm sure he will. Well, maybe not. Like, can we just sit in this space and be okay? This is really hard. And I just think that's the space that grieving people really need. And I at least found in my pastoral experience, I wasn't very good at just saying, I don't know. But I'm here and Jesus is here too. I wanted to explain it. I wanted to bring conclusion because I felt uncomfortable not having the answers to their deep spiritual questions in that moment. But then the more I look at lament, the more I studied it, and I think maybe also the older I got, I just realized, yeah, they don't actually need me to resolve this. They need me to, be present with them as God works them through it. One more thing, in our small group, there was a family whose son, teenage college age son, had bone cancer and he was dying. It was tragic, 19 years old. I'd already written Dark Clouds, Deep Mercy, and the dad understood lament and was practicing it live in our small group. And he's kind of slumped over, in a prayer time, slumped over a large footstool or an ottoman. And he's just wailing. He's practicing Psalm 13. And I know what he's doing. I've got a biblical category for it. I've studied it. Like, I know this moment. He is lamenting. And everything within me wanted him to stop. Because what he was doing was really uncomfortable. And I know this. And so part of it is just having the strength to go, I'm going to stay in this tension. I'm not going to resolve it. I'm not going to bail. We're just going to sit in this, and I'm going to be okay with the uncomfortableness that I feel as a pastor that I don't know what to do in this moment. And that's okay, because they don't know what to do. This is grief, and eventually Jesus will come, and we won't have this experience anymore. But for right now, we live in this tension. Couple others? Grab my coffee a minute.
I guess it's okay to ask. Hey, Jeff from Hope City, Tucson. The question you mentioned earlier about the person in the cul-de-sac where it's become their identity, what are one or two things that could help work them out of that place when they choose to go back there on their own?
Yeah, that is really tough. But the short answer is, I don't know. There is no easy answer for that, because some people have said, well, how do you know when someone's in the cul-de-sac? And I'll tell you this, it's not the first time you hear about their pain, but if we're coming back on this situation and it's the same song, 60th verse, at some point we need to kind of lean in and ask some questions about, hey, do you know what lament is? And here's the process, trying to kind of woo them toward, you know, that direction. To me, it's pretty clear that it's become an identity when almost every conversation comes back to this thing. Mm-hmm. It can be really odd and awkward, like prayer times or sharing. Like, it's not just a thing, it's the thing, and it's over and over and over, and where their pain has become their identity, or they talk about it in a way that just seems like it's not something they can look at, like, at a distance, but something that's still so near and so close. It's a part of conversations, like when someone meets them for the first time and they're like a minute and a half in, and suddenly now they know about this really painful situation. It just feels both socially inappropriate, because it's just so, like, we're talking about normal human things and you just threw in this really big, so there's just an instinct pastorally where you're just like, this seems off to me. And so you have to tread carefully. My tendency is to give people a lot more time. I tend to be more concerned about this more quickly. And so I maybe double the amount of time before I start to maybe kind of lean into it. But you'll start to pick up on things like, yeah, this is not just a thing, but it's the thing. Does that make sense?
It does.
Yeah.
I do think hearing that process is helpful.
There's some people in my experience, as they kind of walk through difficult moments, they do it like this: turn, complain, ask, trust. And then they turn, complain, ask, trust. They're making progress. Turn, complain, ask, trust. Like, they're making progress in counseling or in life. There's other people who do it like this: turn, complain, turn, complain, turn, complain, turn, complain, turn, complain, ask. So what I'm trying to illustrate is the process of people working through this is not entirely predictable. And so we have to give people grace that they're walking through this in their own way. The other tendency is that we tend to overlay how we would process and how other people should process it. And we just have to be careful to not do that. I have a bias. I think that we have historically shut down that process too quickly. And so I tend to give people more slack, if you will, to be able to work through some of those things, to be able to sort of just trace it, you know, along with them. I do a lot of talking in this space with biblical counselors about homework assignments that you could give. One is, for example, to have them study a lament psalm and then write out their own lament, and then sit down with them and have them read it to you. And as they continually lament, you'd be surprised how much progress they make as they're starting to get it out in a framework that's helpful. The cul-de-sac looks like they don't do it, they don't want to do it, they don't want to resolve it. And then the final thing, just contextually, I'll say, you know, some not all pains are the same, right? So there are things that are so deeply painful that because of the extent or the length of what happened to somebody, it's going to take them a while to be able to work through it. And time doesn't mean identity. Identity is, it's something more visceral or connected to the foundation of who they are. So just because it's taking them a while doesn't mean that it's an identity issue. It could be just the depth of what's actually happened in their life, and they haven't had time or anybody who they felt like would care enough to let them process that with them.
Daniel, Oral Valley Baptist. Do you have any kind of practical thoughts for pastoral practices for balancing kind of the emotional drain of trying to weep with those who weep and share their grief, but recognizing you can't carry 100 people's grief without also hurting your family? Like, any practical practices on that balance?
Man, that's a good question. And that is something I'm actually doing a lot of thinking right now about. We could spend a whole day talking about that. I think there's a lot of need to do some work and some thought and some writing on pastoral emotional life for the sake of long-term resilience. And I'm just telling you, as a guy who was in pastoral ministry for 30 years and now I'm in at TGC, there's a difference. It's a little scary. I didn't realize how emotionally taxing pastoral ministry was. Now, what I do is still emotionally taxing, but it's not the same. It's not the same. And I'm thinking about that reality. I think a couple things just off the top of my head would be, one is just to be sure that some of our emotional challenges are related to our good desire to help people, but realizing that at the end of the day, we may want to overhelp sometimes. We like the vision of being involved in life change, but if we're honest, we also like the feel of the Superman cape around our necks. And we got to be careful that we decape and say, I need to give the Lord some time to work. Also realizing that depending on the level of the emotional situation that you're dealing with, you may need to create some additional capacity for renewal and rest. So knowing yourself, even, there's some brothers who could go, you know, take three of those kind of really emotional scenarios, and they're legitimately fine. It's not that they're stronger; they just the way that God's wired them. Other brothers, two of those, and man, I'm done for a day. Another guy, one, and that's not a statement of strength. It's just the reality of how God has wired us. And I think also just knowing that it's okay. That you don't have to enter into the full emotional trauma of every person to be helpful pastorally. In fact, in some respects, you can help them best by acknowledging the reality of their pain, but you also keeping it just a little distant so that you can be helpful. You don't want, for instance, this is not a one-for-one comparison, but you don't want your surgeon. You don't want a trauma surgeon coming in and bawling their eyes out over a gunshot victim, even if he or she is emotionally traumatized by that moment. You want them to do their job, which is to do the surgery. And so in some respects, you have to keep some level of emotional distance to see the crowds, but not be like Jesus, and to feel compassion for them, but to not sort of go so far that you're not really able to serve them well. So, and I'm giving you thoughts that are underdeveloped. I think that's a space that we need to think a lot more about, because I think it's a key to resiliency and long-term pastoral ministry. So that'd just be some things to think about. Does that make sense? Any follow-up questions on that? Okay. Yeah, all the way in the back there.
I got you, bro. Kedrick with Way of Grace Church. Two answers ago, I don't, that answer might speak to this question too. But you had said something in your answer to the gentleman over there about somebody who might be caught in, I think the analogy you used is just that cul-de-sac sort of mentality when it comes to their pain or trauma. You said that it's something that they talk about. Even sometimes they'll just bring it into random conversations where it doesn't really have a place. A proper place. What about dealing with somebody, loving somebody, being in fellowship with someone, a brother or whoever, who might not talk about it, but anytime you ask, how are you doing? Like it comes to that, you know, it's the same. They've been doing the same. They answer that question every single time the same way for years. And it's stuff that impedes their fellowship on a Sunday. It's stuff that impacts their relationships, but they don't talk about it. You know, I don't know. They're willing to kind of hang out, do some fun things, be kind of participate in some of these settings, but showing up on a Sunday, showing up to a Bible study, it's the stuff that they're dealing with impacts their ability to actually fellowship with the body in a meaningful way. But they're not talking about it.
Yeah, that's a great question. And man, I wish there was a simple answer, because every person's story is so unique. There's a reason why people are unwilling to kind of go there, and that's hard to, you know, hard to unlock. Baseline is trying to create an environment where when they're ready to talk, that you're a trusted person that they could talk to. And that means, you know, just doing the basic things that a friend would do, and loving them even when they don't feel like talking. Another thing that I've done is to share out of my own experience. So kind of go where I would want them to go, both because it's good for me, but also it helps to model for them that it's safe to be able to do so. Maybe there's some resources that you might find helpful, and just say, hey, you know, I don't know, just this resource would be of help to you. It's helpful to me. Just that you're kind of along, you know, in the journey. And at the end of the day, though, if they're not willing to talk about it, there is nothing that you can do. And so you have to respect that. And it may mean, though, that that choice on their part is going to affect their relationships. That's sad, because without some level of transparency, you really can't, there's a level of depth that you can only get to. And so they're choosing to have a certain level of depth. And at the end of the day, that is their choice. So you can't force them to talk about something, even though it would be good and helpful for them. And that's really hard. Like, I can think of very specific examples where I'm like, man, if you could just process this, you'd be in such a better place. And they just, we can't make that choice for them. And but we can love them even in their decision to kind of hold their cards close to their chest. And we can grieve the fact that, well, there's always going to be a little bit of a different kind of relationship than what I would want because of this. And that's, you can love them in that. And who knows, maybe the Lord opens a door for a different kind of conversation in the future. It's a great question.
I'm a little off the subject, but how do you discern when you're dealing with grief and some of the other things if the person's not saved? Do you try to take them there, or do you wait for the Lord to share with them? Is there a way to break into that conversation in your dealing with people on a one-to-one basis?
Yeah, it's a good question. And boy, grief is a great opportunity to talk about, you know, the reality of that we live in a broken world. And one of the things that I would hope is that as Christians become competent lamenters, that we can demonstrate to the world, the Bible actually has a category, you know, for this. Ideally, as lament works, it ends up pointing to the ultimate resolution of all laments, which is the personal work of Christ and his return. Because I don't know what psalms we're going to read in the new heavens and the new earth. I don't know what songs we're going to sing, but I know what we're not going to sing, because there will be no more reason for lament. Can you imagine that? No more. Psalm 13 is theoretically in the Bible in the new heavens and the new earth, but it's not need to be read anymore. What a moment that's going to be. For those who are grieving, I think there's an appropriate place to talk about their long-term trajectory in terms of their soul. I would not normally recommend that we're doing that in the middle of a crisis, that it creates an opportunity for a platform for a future conversation. And it may be one that could, you know, sound something like, hey, this has been really, difficult and traumatizing for you. How does this connect into your spiritual journey? Where are you at now? And tell me about what your journey has been up to this point in time. So you could ask some questions to kind of, unpack that. I don't believe that non-Christians can lament in the sense of what we have here in the Bible, because again, it's a prayer in pain that leads to trust. It's Christian language. A person who doesn't believe in God's sovereignty, doesn't understand the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus, doesn't have the category to be able to talk to God about the way that we're identifying in like the lament prayers that we talked about today from Psalm 77.
Kyle Moore with Canyon Bible Church. And maybe kind of going back to the question that was posed back here about the person who is not willing to share things with you, and to a question a little bit further back, relating to just lament and what we as pastors can observe, how people lament or even if they do. And so if a person is not, maybe just a comment, if a person is not able to trust you in sharing these things with you, most likely that's also reflective they're not trusting God in lamenting and sharing things with him. And so it could be an opportunity to say, okay, how are, just discipling them to, how are you lamenting with God? How are you trusting him in these things? And that might open up the opportunity again for you to then come alongside them and say, hey, what are you sharing with the Lord? How can I encourage you to what is true of him? Because otherwise that trust is never going to actually happen. And then just another comment, I've witnessed brothers lament and it just doesn't seem to match the situation of what they're sharing, the level of grief. And so I appreciate your comment about grace, but that too might be just the depth of something else is really going on. Like how, why is this impacting you so deeply and so richly? It doesn't seem, it seems not scaling correctly. And so it's an opportunity to come alongside them and point them to, again, what is true of God and what the real struggle is at its root, because that root might be manifesting itself in some small fruit in this trial, but really there's something misapplied or misrooted, I guess, for lack of a better word. So not really questions, but can you maybe comment on witnessing people's lament and observing how best you can give them the gospel without simple platitudes of get over it and trust God?
Yeah, great question. And I affirm what you're saying. So in the first case, grief is so complicated that, and I'm sure you guys have this, there are certain people in your life where it's really easy to share with them when you're hurting, and other people, it's just harder. And you could have the same, people could have the same level of godliness, but there's something about somebody else in terms of just their, who they are. And it just, it's like they have an ability to kind of unlock your heart. My wife has, I have a friend and my wife calls him the Mark Whisperer, because of his life experience, he has an ability like just to get it faster than others. And so one of the things is just to realize that sometimes pastors are that broadly for everyone, but not always to the same degree. And so the key is, part of your discipleship is helping other people so that you, and maybe back to this brother's thing about emotional pacing, if you're the only one that folks can lament with, or you're the only one shepherding them, that's not only unhealthy for you, there should be a need for a discipleship that you can have other people who could really be helpful. So it could indicate that somebody has a problem with the Lord, and that very well can be. It also can be, and I've had people before that once they get lament, they're like, they think that everybody should lament with them. And there's a experience, there's personality, there's the whole person thing that's connected in there. And then trying to remember your second, what was your second? It was really good, but I've forgotten it already, sorry.
Maybe just that
you observe lament. Oh, yeah. Yeah, so my bias is, historically, I was too quick, and I think other people are too quick to try and exegete and evaluate if they should be that sad about it. And so I am, to a fault, going to give people more grace, and I'm going to assume that there's something going on there more than what I know about. And I'm going to try and approach that from a pastoral care standpoint, just to be like, hey, can you tell me more about that, or sense that that was a sensitive thing, as opposed to saying something like, man, it just seems like this is a lot, right? I know you're not saying that, but that's a lot of people's posture in the church. And sometimes what's underneath that is not a really care for that person. It's more people's grief makes us uncomfortable. We'd like them to stop because it makes everything really awkward. And so sometimes it sounds like it's caring, but it's actually, to be Frank, it's a bit selfish because we want people to stop making us feel uncomfortable. So I think just being able to sit in that is a really important pastoral skill that I found myself to be underdeveloped in until the Lord kind of leveled us, and even still had a lot of work to do in that space.
Dave Flood, One Life Bible Church in Snowflake. You had mentioned before about something about pastors that most of the men in this room will identify with, and that's that we have a tendency to want to wear capes. And we've been talking about people primarily in the congregation that have overt grief or some struggle that they're going through that lament would work for them. The tendency of pastors that are going through something is to hide it because they don't want to show any kind of spiritual or even emotional weakness. What are some of the telltale signs that someone like me could see in a pastor, in my pastor, that would help me first off to identify that he needs someone to come alongside, and secondly, then how do I approach him in a way that can help him into the lament process?
Yeah. That's a really good question. And I think it depends upon the pastor's personality and the nature of your relationship. In some cases, it could be as simple as just saying, hey, here's a resource that I found helpful. And maybe 6 weeks later, just follow up. Could we have coffee and just talk? What about this resource book was insightful to you? I found it to be insightful. And or making yourself available just to say, hey, I would imagine that pastoral ministry at times can be just really hard and painful, and just want you to know I'm praying for you. And is there, maybe by thinking of a couple good questions that you could ask just to get a check on how the guy is doing. The hard part is that most of the time when there's a wall like that, that wall doesn't come down in a direct, there has to be a sort of a back door to come at that really directly. Like, hey, I feel like you're struggling with something and you're not grieving very well. Can you tell me about it? That's not going to work. So it takes some care, because again, grief is really complicated. Or we could assume that they should be grieving in a particular way, and maybe they don't need to be, because that's our experience. And again, we tend to apply and overlay our experience onto other people. We think, boy, they should be doing it this way, when the reality is they might not. And so you're picking up. Grief is really complicated. And so I think we just take some time, walk carefully, context of relationship, asking good questions, leading with some, hey, what do you think about, and see if those walls can come down a bit.
Ryan with Missio Dei Church. What would be your advice to somebody who ends up in a situation where somebody is sharing something with you that is just so astronomically beyond any type of situation that you've personally suffered or experienced? You know, how would you navigate that without pretending like you know what they're going through? Should you redirect them to somebody else? Should you focus on listening? So what's your advice for somebody who hasn't personally suffered an extreme amount, ends up in a situation with somebody who's just sharing an extreme amount of suffering?
It's a great question. I actually think the reverse problem is more dangerous and more common. I actually think for you to be able to say to a friend, I have no idea what you're going through. Thank you for sharing. I am so sorry. And is my battery dead? I am so sorry. And how can I help you is a really the best practice. I think it's more difficult. Child, but it was an adult or a teenage special needs child, and they were standing at the receiving line for the funeral, and someone came up to them and said, "We are so sorry for your loss." And they said, "Thank you." They said, "You know what? We really resonate. We know how you feel." And they said, "You do?" "Yeah, we do. Our dog died last week."
Oh my gosh.
It is a true story. You'll never forget it. And I pray it'll help you to be okay to say, "I'm so sorry," and if I could be blunt, shut your mouth. Just say, "I'm sorry, I'm here, just sit with me." Somebody said, "Just sit with me in the mourning bench." And so you're actually in a really good spot if you don't have any idea what to do with their pain. If you think you do, be very, very careful about the parallels.
For a moment there, our power went out, and that's why all the audio cut out.
All right, no problem. That was a pretty great brownout, so.
Brian Morris, Maranatha Baptist Church. How would you recommend preaching through longer texts of lament? Kind of a bit of maybe context. My first year at my church, for my first two summers, I inherited a preaching schedule that had me in book three of the Psalms for two summers straight. And while it was good, it was hard. Because it was very dark, especially when we get to Psalm 88. And it almost felt at times like, for me, it was, to be blunt, a bit soul-sucking. And I even got that from some of my congregation. Is there a way you might recommend preaching on lament? Because preparing for suffering when you're suffering is the worst time to do it. Is there a way you might recommend preaching on something like that in advance where it's not just draining on everyone?
Yeah, keep the mic there a second. How many weeks did you do the book three?
It was one psalm a week. And so it was spread out over two summers, but the back half seemed to feel a lot darker than the first half, because the first one we were doing Psalm 71, 72, 73, then it begins, and then the next half it was just all dark until we got to Psalm 90.
Yeah, so all summer, so 3 months, and then the next month, so or 2 months about, so.
Yeah, but it was okay. Over two separate years.
Yeah. I think that there is, it's a really, really good question. So like when we did at the church, we did the Book of Lamentations. I did that in 6 weeks. I did the Book of Job in 6 weeks as well. I didn't do, you know, if you do, and you could do Job verse by verse every single week. You just want to kill Job's friends by week four, right? And so everyone's angry, you know. So you can do expositional by doing verse by verse, but not every verse by every verse. You know what I'm saying? So you just have to be wise in how you do that. So in our case with Lamentations, it was a 6 week series, and then I wanted to be sure that our worship team was balancing out the heavy tone, so we could do both. Wanted them to fit, but didn't want it to be, you know, dark Sunday every single week. And I think you just have to know your people. I would guess that if you're doing that 6 weeks in a row, 8 weeks in a row without a break, it's gonna feel heavy. And so what you could do in that case is maybe if you're doing, you know, book three of the Psalms, is you could take, you could bundle them or take them, but not take them in the actual order. So you could kind of take a couple and then do a one that's more hopeful or Song of Ascent, you know, things of that sort. So I do think getting a pulse of your people is important. And again, that's just a wisdom point. But I think your concern is a very legitimate one. You can overplay this. I don't know if it's going to happen or not, but there's a guy who was really transformed by lament, like really transformed by lament. He's not in our circle of churches. And so he called me and said, "Hey, can we do a Zoom call?" I said, "Yes." He said, "I have an idea. I'm planting a church. And let's just say, I don't want to name the denomination." So, but the name of his church was going to be Lament, the denomination, and then church. So let's just go with Baptist, but it wasn't. So the name of the church was gonna be Lament Baptist Church. And I was like, "Dude, I think that's a terrible idea." I was like, "Are you sure?" He's like, "Oh no, I'm like, "Okay, I mean, it's one out of three. We're not three out of three." And so to lead with that, So I just think there is wisdom to know. If you're going to have a lament group, It needs to be time, and they need to stop. They can't, you can't overplay this. So I think that's just something that you need to figure out and be wise with, knowing the pulse of your people. And don't name your church Lament Baptist Church, okay? It's just a bad idea.
All right, guys, got time for two more, okay? Got one here, and if there's one more, go with it.
You talk about in your book about, and maybe you're talking about this in the second session, about leading your church through corporate lament. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about your first time doing that and kind of your experience, the feedback you got, and then kind of your thoughts about corporate lament moving forward after that?
Yeah, part of the reason that lament is not as frequent in the discipleship framework of our people is because they don't know it exists as a category, and secondly, because they don't see it modeled. And one of the best places to model it is like in a pastoral prayer or, you know, at a funeral. I don't know what your guys' experience is like, but mine was, and people prepared funerals, and like the worst thing anybody could do at a funeral was cry. A celebration of life, all these jokes, and I'm just like, somebody died. Like, why can't we just acknowledge? That has to be a whole service, but why is it that the expression of sorrow is so anathema in our, so we take that verse, you know, sorrow, but those who have hope, but we just, it's just all about, but those who have hope, but those who have hope. We don't actually realize that the sorrow is an important piece of that. So I think demonstrating what that looks like and what that sounds like. And so, I mean, even though I wrote Dark Clouds, Deep Mercy, it's not as though we would have a full-on lament prayer every three Sundays. But lament got into the framework of parts of our pastoral prayers. It's not like it informed every sermon, but we would acknowledge even in the call to worship. There's some of you that are glad to be here today, and some of you that you barely made it to church today. And we're going to sing some songs that are going to resonate with some of you, and some of you, it's an act of faith to say some of these things today. And just calling out that there's a lot of people in the church who are really really struggling, and then giving models of what that could look like. When there's a tragedy in the church that's big, or a tragedy that's happening nationally, there's opportunities to just lament that and to pray prayers that fit kind of the need of the moment. And then just figuring out as a pastoral team, how do we not only teach this, but also model it in helpful ways?
Hey, I'm John Root from Pella Communities. So when you're saying like nationally, again, I'm not trying to get controversial here. We're talking about like specific issues. How do you go about that without being like politically polarizing? Because obviously it's like, oh, I believe this, and then I'm nuanced with this politically, and then why didn't you touch on that? And obviously that's a lot of what we're dealing with in the church right now. That's what a lot of young people want to hear the church talk about. There's churches that are like, well, my church is alive because we talk about these specific issues, and then you guys aren't. So like, how would you address that and encourage pastors and churches to go about those things that are happening nationally?
Yeah. Anyone know the answer to that question? That is, that is a really important question. And I think also, in my experience of traveling around the country, has local contexts that need to be lived out. And I think that's a discussion that, you know, as a pastoral team, what kind of things are we going to pray into pastorally, and how and when? And you do your best to navigate that. But, you know, there were times that there were national events that we lamented. And there were folks in our church who were disappointed that the lament didn't go deeper. There were some folks who were a little perturbed that we lamented it at all. And some folks who took issue with our language that we actually used in the lament prayer. You know, so it's, I mean, when a national tragedy happens, your verbs matter. Was this person killed? Did this person die? Were they killed? Were they assassinated? Like, all those verbs matter. And, or martyred. Right? And so, or is this something that we pray about in a way that tilts to one particular community within our church but misses another? And it's really tough. And so we spent a lot of time, and I think we did a decent job, but there's some times that we either missed it because we didn't lament it. I talk about in the book that, you know, when I was writing it, the the whole thing that was happening in Ferguson, remember that back in the day? And we just were kind of ignoring it. And I had minority church members that were like, look, there's big stuff going on and we're not praying about it. And so that started a conversation about what things are we going to pray into and what are we not. And it's really tricky. I mean, I wish I had a playbook for you. I don't. Don't be political. At the same time, that's not right. Don't be partisan. That's a better way to say that. And then I would encourage you to think about the context of the people and how to don't pray breaking news. Pray about the experience of your people. And then also realize that what you're reading up here needs to be contextualized down here. And sometimes our translation from here to here is bumpy because we're more attuned, and our people are more attuned to a global and national scene than they are to what's happening locally.